Now, when you think about analytics, I don't know if you've seen it a lot lately in the news. I certainly have. I don't know if you would think about the University of Bridgeport. Now, I have to confess, my mother actually is a UB grad. She went for their nursing school many years ago. And so I keep tabs on UB, and something came across my email maybe a month or so ago talking about the analytics students over at UB. And I thought, what? Analytics? University of Bridgeport? What's going on? So I'm very excited to talk just about their program in general, understand it a little bit better, and why they have made the news recently. And joining us to give us more of that information is Mike Lowley, who is the chair of the undergraduate and graduate analytics programs and associate professor at the University of Bridgeport. Mike, welcome in studio. Glad to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you here. Now, before we even dive into what has really transpired at the University of Bridgeport, it sounds silly, but what is analytics for people who may hear that term and think, oh, yeah, but then to define it might be a little bit harder to do. What is that?
Sure. Analytics is really, when it comes down to it, it's moving from gut feel decision making and intuition to fact based decision making. Mm. You know, you think about that old show, Mad Men. Do you remember that one?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. So that was about a bunch of guys down on Madison Avenue trying to divine advertising for somebody in the Midwest that might be using a product they never touched. And, you know, as a result, what came out of that was a very homogenous sort of vanilla approach that might not have worked, might not have expanded the marketplaces for them as much as it could have. They missed the nuance. They missed the cultural differences, the perceptual differences, the way to position their products that they could have gotten only from information.
Mm.
And so analytics basically brings that to the fore, so that you can take that facts-based decision making, that take the fact-based decisions that would position your products more effectively, maybe gain your market larger, and move the business forward.
So analytics to me always sounded like something that was math-based, but you're talking more about just, it sounds like almost information collection.
That's really what it's about. If I can use, I'll use an analogy that
Please.
Works for me, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, these days, if you think about it, so much information, there's more information in a day than basically.
Too much.
Right.
To be honest, it's way too much.
Well, see, and you're hitting it right on the head, right? So for every senior leader in a business, you know, they've got information coming at them. I liken it to a water hose. I don't know. When I was growing up, I drank out of a water hose
Same.
In the summer, right? And it's
Yes.
hard to digest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, analytics people, basically, if we're doing our job correctly, we're basically providing that water in a glass so that they can drink from it. Now,
okay.
Now, a lot of people say, well, okay, analytics is technology, and sure it is, okay? But that's the piece with the glass, okay? Now, if we're doing our jobs correctly, we actually help the senior leaders drink the water, the data, so that they can digest it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when we're really doing our job effectively. It's like a process for doing so. And as a result, we help them gain the insights to move the business forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what analytics is.
That's okay? Interesting. And I mean, even just what you broke down before, Mike, that made a lot of sense because every state is going to be different. We laugh a lot on the show because I lived in Vermont for 10 years on mm-hmm. and off. And when you go up there, if you want to order soft serve ice cream, it's called creamy. It's called
right,
a creamy.
Exactly.
So if you wanted to market, let's just say, like soft serve ice cream, and you're saying, oh, come get our soft serve, you actually would probably lose an awful lot of business up in Vermont because they wouldn't even refer to it as that. So that's, you know, just a very, very simple, I'm saying, you know, information. But from just one state to another in New England, something like that is so totally different. And that's where analytics could come into play.
Yeah, I grew up in New Jersey, and submarine sandwiches were grinders up here.
Sure.
I didn't even realize for the first 10 years I lived here. So yeah, and
go.
So analytics, we'd be able to get the insight to be able to sell that ice cream more effectively.
Wow. So why do you think, Mike, analytics has become so incredibly popular? Because I'm hearing more and more students looking for that program when they are entering into colleges. I'm hearing that more, it seems.
Well, absolutely. So there's a couple of reasons for it. First of all, as we mentioned before, the data is just generating a pace.
Mm.
And so the need for people to master it and help the leadership with that insight it's not going to go away. It's going to proceed apace. But what comes with that are solid salaries. Okay. And it might vary by metropolitan statistical area. I mean, maybe in Manhattan, the salaries are different than here, are different than maybe Broward County, Florida. I'm just
sure.
picking a couple out.
Right.
But by and large, if you look at it, the salaries are solid and they're high. So, and there's good career growth, because if you picture it, there's this whole industry that's grown up around it. And so I'd say that combination really is what's driving interest, both from students. We have undergrad and grad programs. And what I see is mid-career professionals who want to use this to give their career a turbo boost mid-career.
Interesting.
Or, you know, undergraduates who realize, you know, hey, you're not going to get security in business. Okay, let me just state that flat out. But this is the closest thing to it because there's such demand, because the data, we're going to need people to master that for years to come.
Right. It sounds like it's not going away anytime
soon.
Not at all. So again, we have Mike Lowley here, who is the chair of the undergraduate and graduate analytics programs over at University of Bridgeport, also an associate professor there. Mike, what got you into analytics?
Well, I was basically my dad. My father was a long time, it wasn't analytics at the time, information systems guy.
And oh, okay.
I just was interested in following in his footsteps. I went to Fairfield U undergrad.
Oh, cool.
And got a job at GE in a training program for IT, and the rest is history.
Wow.
And I've stayed with it. And, you know, you asked me about careers. I mean, I coded, programmed for about 8 years, but most of my career has been in management and analysis, analytics. Mm-hmm. And so it's fueled a long 26-year career. I've been at UB for about 10 years now. But prior to that, I was in industry for a long time doing this stuff. And it was good.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, obviously, you know a thing or two about analytics. Why did UB show interest in bringing this program?
Well, first of all, you can't – these days, analytics is table stakes. If you think about what we were just saying, you can't – if you don't have comfort with data as either an organization or an individual, you're going to get left behind. And these days, it's not even about, you know, analytics is unique. It's you just better be up with it. So we saw it as a critical component, a cornerstone or foundational piece in what we're trying to do there. I mean, the Trust School of Business is really where this is housed. And we felt that this was a critical piece of knowledge, a critical process for people to understand if they're going to be effective in industry. So we had to have it.
Mm.
That's the way I'd describe it.
We have Mike Lowley here, who is the chair of the undergraduate and graduate analytics programs and associate professor over at the University of Bridgeport. We are talking all analytics because they have an analytics program. I don't know if you knew that at the University of Bridgeport. We were just kind of defining it, why there are so many jobs available, what it could do for students. And so, Mike, I also wanted to just talk about specifically UB analytics students. I did notice they were in the news recently. What's happening with the program? What are we seeing students do with these skills they're getting at the school?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, you're probably talking about foot traffic stats,
yes.
Right? So what we're doing is there's a lot of analytics program. It's a crowded marketplace out there. And for the reasons I pointed out. And so one of the things that differentiates us is we're making a big push into experiential learning. And what that means is that it's not just out of the book. We want to get the students getting some practical experience. We also have a lot of certificates as well, most notably a partnership or an academic collaboration with SAS. But anyway, talking about foot traffic stats, it's a great example. It's our first entree into this experiential learning. And how that started was a guy by the name of Frank Kuczynski. Frank, if you're listening, thanks. was on our industry advisory board, and he had this startup, Foot Traffic Stats. And basically, it's an Internet of Things company, and, you know, fancy word for saying they have these tools that will scan when folks walk into a high traffic area. Okay,
okay,
it's a
you're
sensor.
Seeing how many people go
yeah,
through.
Yeah, I was wrestling
okay.
with the word. You could probably tell.
No, you're fine.
So they had these sensors, and what they wanted to do was use UB as their use case, because
oh, cool.
these sensors will help you manage queuing and volume for things like banks, etc.
Sure.
Anyway, so they wanted to use UB, and so he and his partner Matt Kern teamed up with one of our faculty members, a guy by the name of Dr. Ali Baker, who is awesome, and I want to thank him because he stepped up and changed his entire capstone course in analytics to accommodate this.
Wow.
And so, you know, what they did was they worked with the students. And the students managed the placement of these sensors around campus in high traffic areas like the Wheeler Rec Center, the library, the cafeteria, among others. they managed the maintenance of the sensors, so they had to make sure that they were in operational order. And they developed these dashboards, like your car, right? Mm-hmm. Your car's gas gauge and the fuel. But in this case, they had key performance indicators where basically they helped the folks managing these different groups understand when the volume was highest, when the volume was lowest, et cetera, in a dashboard form using a product called Power BI, which is very prominent in industry.
Okay.
And so obviously, you know, the students got a lot out of it. Ali tells me all the time, because I'm a big project management guy, Mike, it wasn't just technology. I mean, we did a lot of project management. This is real interdisciplinary stuff that really you don't find elsewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Very practical. But, you know, foot traffic stats told us that, hey, you know what? We got a chance to do a use case that, you know, we wouldn't have seen our product in action, okay, until this. We got their direct input into our curriculum, which we've actually taken action on. And, you know, basically now the foot traffic stats people describe us as their analytics shop, which is great. Because when you think about it, they're a startup.
Right.
And so we expand their reach, right? So that it's really been a win-win. And we're going to work to do a lot more of these types of experiential learning projects going forward. It's really,
Cool.
Really a game changer for us, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a startup that's in Stratford, right?
In Stratford, yes.
Wow, so it's like local helping local.
Absolutely,
that.
Yep.
Oh, that's really neat. So if people are interested in either enrolling their students into this or, like you were saying, you have kind of split student bodies. You've got, you know, the brand new students coming in as undergrads and they want to take on analytics, or you have people who are already established but they want to make a change in their career and they've heard a lot about analytics, or even just hearing this they're like, you know what, this might be something I want to explore. What would you suggest, Mike? Where should they go? Is there like a page on the UB site or anything that people should be looking at? Or what do you suggest is the next step?
Sure. So, well, the easiest thing to do is go on the website, do a search on analytics. What will happen is they'll see both the master's analytics programs. At the master's level, we have an online program as well as a campus-based program. And we have an undergraduate program. They'll see both there. They can also contact me. I'll share my email. It's mlohle@bridgeport.edu. That's mlohle@bridgeport.edu. And if I can't answer the question, I'll route them to the right people.
That's perfect. And again, if you want to go to the website, it's also bridgeport.edu.
You can
see other news and stuff on there. That's where I found this was bridgeport.edu/news. But you can find a lot of great resources just by going to bridgeport.edu. That's the University of Bridgeport. And Mike Lowley, I thank you so much for being so passionate about analytics and having such a huge role at the University of Bridgeport in this wave of analytics students and going out into the working field and doing this. I thank you so much for being a part of that.
Well, thanks for giving us the opportunity for the visibility. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I look forward to more continued success and keep sharing those stories here on WICC.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Again, Mike Lowley is the chair of the undergraduate and graduate analytics program over at UB and also an associate professor. We have First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick joining us now from the town of Fairfield with a couple big topics on today's docket. Hey, Brenda, how are you?
I'm well. Good morning. How was your vacation?
It was good. It was really good. I realized that I feel like I've taken all my vacation time in the summer, but maybe I don't know how that all lined up, but I feel like this summer in particular, I really needed it. So it was good.
Good for you.
Good to unplug.
Well, good.
Yeah. No, I feel good.
You work hard. You deserve it.
Well, I appreciate that, Brenda. Thank you very much. Now, I will say, before I left for vacation, things got a little heated between myself and Senator Tony Wong. And I respect Tony Wong. I respect all of our lawmakers. I'm not affiliated with any party in particular. But I wasn't mad at him. I want to make that very clear. But I just was getting very, very frustrated with the conversation because we were talking about redistricting, specifically in Fairfield. And this law that he kept referring to me, sounded very archaic, very outdated. And I'm surprised that nothing has been changed. And I directly asked him, if he was so upset about it, why hasn't anything changed? And essentially the answer was, well, we've tried to change it, but nothing's happened. Now, I have heard that you have directly tried to change this legislation when you worked for the legislature, correct?
Yeah, when I served in the legislature, when I was elected back in 2010, I want to say probably my first term, maybe, 2011, 2012, we started to discuss it, because when I was on the Board of Education, this was the hot topic back then, from 2003 to 2009. the town kept getting letters from the state of Connecticut saying, you're pending racial imbalance, you're pending. And then we'd get letters saying, you're in racial imbalance. And corrective actions they were expecting the town to take were more specifically the Board of Education. And even then, when I was elected, there was a federal lawsuit that was filed by the McKinley parents because the prior board, before I came on, had swapped half of the McKinley district with half of the Stratfield School District in an effort to comply with this racial imbalance law. And so many of the McKinley parents got together and filed a federal lawsuit saying they were being discriminated against because of their race, which I thought was valid. At that time, the judge basically said, listen, let's see what the election does. I mean, people went to court and I had to testify as a candidate. Board of Education members had to testify. So at any rate, when I got elected, two other members got elected. The first motion we made was to reverse the swap and start to work on addressing any inequities that may have been happening that were of concern. Mm-hmm. So we did one of the most important ones that we did was an opt-in, opt-out program. So what we said was, okay, if the state thinks that we're not allowing full access to everybody, we will say that anybody who wants to come to McKinley can come to McKinley, and anyone who wants to opt out of McKinley can opt out. We will pay for the transportation.
Okay.
Well, what happened there was most McKinley families, all, chose not to opt out of the school because it was a great school. It was a diverse school, and they liked it there.
It is a great school.
But what was happening was we were having minority students opting into McKinley outside of the McKinley School District.
Okay.
So that was pushing the number up.
What makes McKinley so different than Brenda? Because I guess the thing I was so confused about with this, and even hearing it from you, you're making sense, but I'm wondering, like, why is everyone flocking to McKinley? Why wouldn't, I mean, McKinley's not that far from Jennings. It's not that far from North Stratfield, Stratfield School. Why McKinley? Why does that seem to be the school that everyone is wanting to opt into? It seems like
At that time, listen, everybody wants a neighborhood school, okay? People want to be to the school closest to their home,
sure.
Right? It
mm-hmm.
makes sense. That's what Fairfield was based on.
Yeah.
It's what we've worked hard for many years and something we value.
Mm-hmm.
McKinley School community just happens to be in the most, what I would say, diverse area of our town.
Okay.
So naturally so, it will have a more diverse population.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a plus. I mean, my son went to McKinley School. We chose to live in that district. We valued that. We thought it was an important cultural experience for our child. And so at any rate, you know, the state has this antiquated 1960 law. And so when I got to the legislature, I said to the education chairman when I was serving on that committee my first term, can we take a look at this? I put a bill in to start a working group and have just a review, have this, you know, the State Department of Education, have education leaders, have, any organization who would be interested, sit on a task force. The legislature creates task forces all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought, hey, what's the big deal? Let's have a task force. Let's open up this law. Let's see why was it written in the 60s and how can we update it to make it more relevant
for
today?
Say?
No.
Just no. But what, because it's too controversial?
Yeah. Basically, I was told, not in a meeting, that, listen, we're not touching it with a 10-foot pole. It's too controversial.
I hate to ask this question, Brenda, and maybe this is too, like, you know, strike that. You can't ask that question. But if you were not white, would they have considered it? Like, if this had come from a lawmaker who was Latino or was African-American, like, would they have considered relooking at it? I mean, I think it's insane that we've got a 50-plus-year-old law on the books when we're not living in the same times. We certainly have a lot of issues still with racism and inequity, no question. But I'm surprised that it was just a flat-out no. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I can't say how it would have been perceived if I was of a different race. I honestly think that, listen, there's a lot of thorny issues that the legislature deals with. And how many towns are really facing this issue? Not that many. Same thing with the 8-30G law. not that many towns are being impacted. So you're not going to see a whole lot of interest from a 151-member House, where maybe, you know, 75% of those House districts don't have this issue.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But I mean, at the same time, we still have people who have been debating now for several sessions over with the assisted suicide. I mean, I'm not saying it correctly, but the assisted death legislation.
Right, the position,
and that really only impacts a handful of people. I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
Right,
I mean, when you I don't know.
But it could impact people all across the state, right? So it becomes more of a religious
issue. Sure. I get what you're saying. I just think, like, man, when you look at Fairfield, with over 60,000 people living in Fairfield, it's a huge town. And I do think it's hard to look at those hundreds of students, which I'm sure you agree with, and say, you know, it's not enough for us to look at the law and fix it. You know, you 200-plus students, it's, you know, whatever, you'll get over it, you'll redistrict. I think that's, oof. That's harsh.
I think it's lousy. I mean, listen, I think that it should, I think our legislators, at least in Fairfield, should continue to put it. I put the bill in every single year I was there, even though I knew they wouldn't. And I tried, I asked. I mean, you have to keep trying, right? I don't think you should just give up, even though, you know, it's a tough climb. But it's come on, any law that was written in the 60s, needs a little dusting off of it.
And there's got to be plenty of them. There have to be plenty of them. I mean, I'm just saying. But yeah, I agree. I think it has to keep being pushed. I am curious. I don't know if you have this answer, Brenda, but do we know how many districts are impacted directly by the racial imbalance law with redistricting and stuff?
So over my tenure on this issue, it's always been Greenwich and Fairfield. We have sort of been in the crosshairs of this thing.
Okay.
Greenwich has done different things. Well, Greenwich has a very different grand list than Fairfield has.
Okay.
By leaps and bounds. So they have a different scenario. What we did was, you know, we kept putting in different plans and stuff, and every year it would change. So sometimes we would be a little bit under, you know, pending racial imbalance, then we would be in racial imbalance. So this has been going on literally
For a long time. I happen to be having Ryan Fazio come on the show later this week or maybe next week, and I know he represents part of Greenwich. I'd be interested to see what he thinks about it. I think if Greenwich is the other spot in Fairfield County, I still think it's worth talking about. So yeah, and pushing.
Listen, think any law, like I said, any law that was written over 50 years ago needs a review. And even if it doesn't impact a whole lot of districts, I think it's a responsibility of the legislature to update state laws and look at them and see if they're really working. And maybe they just need to be changed, because this kind of controversy saying we have to have a specific number of minorities spread across the town of Fairfield at each of the schools. I mean, to me, that's racist.
That's a different time. I mean, we're talking about a totally different time period where that was more appropriate.
It was appropriate in the 60s. There were depressed areas of communities where those certain schools where there was a high minority population were not getting resources, were not getting the best curriculum, were not getting the best teachers. That was a real thing in the 60s.
Right. But
it needed to be addressed.
Yeah.
It's different now.
Yeah. I would like to encourage any towns or cities, by the way, if you have a newsletter that you will frequently send out to the residents in your town or city, you can certainly add me to that list. I would love to be on that list. For example, I'm on Fairfield's list. And so whenever Brenda Kupchick sends out newsletters to the town, I also get CC'd on those and I can see them. And that's how I'm able to sometimes generate a lot of my news stories out of Fairfield. This one I thought was really interesting. We have First Elect Woman Brenda Kupchick here of Fairfield. She sent out a newsletter last week talking about an extensive investigation into potential policy violations regarding the use of town-issued credit cards. And in fact, the findings of this investigation resulted in updated protocols ensuring that town employees are held to the highest standards. What was found in the investigation, Brenda? And tell us about these new protocols in place.
So, as you know, Melissa, in our town, even 3.5 years into my term, you know, just continues to face the hardships of, you know, the wake of the worst public corruption scandal, the environmental disaster. I mean, this has all been reported over the course of 3.5 years. And so at any rate, you know, we looked at this. A member of the Ethics Commission that I appointed said, you know, came in and said, hey, you know, I want to look at some of these credit cards, you know, statements. And so, okay, what are you looking for? At any rate, we were looking at them. And, you know, just like anything else, like, you know, bottom line, as a result of this inquiry, you know, we identified that past policies were in desperate need of reform. We updated protocols to ensure that our town employees are following all the rules. And it seemed like everything that when I came into Fairfield was just the policies were so antiquated. And again, there wasn't. I'm sorry. I was getting an incoming call.
Oh, you're right. Oh, I've had that happen before. Yes, you're doing the show, and then an incoming call comes in. I get you. No worries.
I apologize about that.
You're fine.
So the bottom line is there wasn't clear training. Well, there wasn't clear training on a whole lot of things in town hall before I arrived. But there, some of these things were just simple things where say, for example, you know, when say our building maintenance person was you know, going to, you know, Home Depot to buy something they have to fix, because we have 18 town buildings that DPW has a section of their department that they work on, the buildings, the library, mm-hmm. the police department,
sure.
the fire department, town hall, all these things, the senior center. So if they have to fix a toilet or if they have to fix this or fix that, whatever it is. But you have to attach the receipt. You have to explain what the item was for. You have to fill out the form. So there were some loose standards involved, and some of the things that were uncovered were some things that were inappropriate, that weren't in line with the policy. So I asked the HR department and the finance department to open up an investigation and just take a look back, you know, a 5-year look back. So what they did, and it took time. I mean, they have other things, a lot of other items on their plate in the HR department, but they went back and looked at a sampling of 5 years of credit card use. And, you know, honestly, we didn't know what would be the result of this investigation, especially after everything else that happened in town before I got here. So, you know, I was actually happy it wasn't this, like, huge, like, millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars of inappropriate expenses. It was, you know, some things with the WPCA, some of the things that came up at the WPCA, which is sort of it's sort of not under the umbrella of town hall, but is it's a unique situation and something we're learning more about as we go along. But they were, there was a past practice of the supervisor or the superintendent of that facility buying like lunches, like McDonald's or something, because the work conditions at the WPCA, as you can imagine, aren't the most pleasant. It's a wastewater treatment facility, so it's not the best work environment. And so they were doing some things for morale. After the investigation, it was determined by the HR director that $845 of spending over a long period of time would not meet the standards and the policies of our current policies, that employee repay that amount.
Oh, okay.
And so the article that was written, he's a young reporter, just got out of college. I don't know if you read some of the articles, but he didn't fully report all the information. And I know you can't write like a book about it, and it is a very detailed subject. But some of the things that were written in there, for example, it was noted that there was $21,000 of inappropriate expenses. And that actually wasn't a completely accurate number, because some of these things are like the donation funds from the police and fire departments, where they have, you know, like where you can donate money to a scholarship fund or to a charitable fund of those departments. They're asked to use a credit card, a town credit card, to pay for whatever items they're using, and then they pay it back through the fund.
Okay.
Not from town funds. So
right.
This young man, I think, got confused about that, which is fine, because I know it's a bit complicated. But yeah. At the end of the day, I think it was a very good exercise that we did this, that we had this thorough review. It was, we put in tons of training during the process, during the investigation, as things were coming up. And the HR director said, hey, you know, some of these policies are pretty loose. We need to tighten these up. I said,
which is always great. Again, going back to the drawing board, if something is archaic or isn't quite working,
yeah,
you go back
it.
And you fix it up a little bit. Yeah. When it looks go for it, Brenda.
And our employees welcomed, you know, they welcomed it, and the department heads welcomed the training. They had never been given any training on this stuff. So we have now updated that training. We are updating our policies. And I think it was a good example. Listen, you know, I think it's a headline people look at. They go, credit card scandal or whatever it is. And they think that, you know, people are out, you know, buying, you know, expensive luxury cars or doing something completely inappropriate.
Right.
Yes,
and that's
there were violations to the policy, and
right.
we've tightened the controls, and we're going to continue to do that, like we've been doing since I came into office, fixing a lot of broken, antiquated systems.
Well, Brenda Kupchick, I appreciate you tackling both of these subjects this morning and coming on the show. Thank you so, so much, and I'm sure we'll be talking again really soon.
Yeah, it was nice to talk to you. Have a good week.
All right, thanks. You too. Fairfield First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick here on WICC. It's one of America's pastimes, right? We're talking about the sport baseball. And this hour alone, we were talking about the Savannah Bananas coming to Hartford and all the buzz around that. And Vincent DeRubias, who is one of their players, who's a Trumbull native. He was born and raised here in Trumbull. And he was picked up by the Savannah Bananas, actually, one of their more recent players, even though he got a horrific injury playing, trying to make it to the majors. He is now blind in one of his eyes, and yet he's just so successful on the Savannah Bananas, and we are so proud and very excited to cheer him on later on this evening when his team takes the field up at Duncan and Hartford. And we have another really exciting story out of Trumbull this morning. The Trumbull Babe Ruth team is playing in the World Series in Virginia, and who better to talk about it than one of their broadcasters, one of their announcers, Mr. Rob Adams, who also is our local sports expert here on the morning show. Welcome back, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I mean, it's exciting. The world of baseball really heating up, especially, it seems, in Trumbull, Connecticut. What's going on, Rob?
You know, it was a great ride. It did come to an end. The World Series ended on Saturday with Orcutt, California, winning the title. But Trumbull made it into the playoffs, falling to a team from Eagle Pass, Texas, in the playoffs before Orcutt went on and beat Eagle Pass for the title. But what a great ride for this Trumbull Babe Ruth team. You know, they started back in early July with the state tournament and had a good run, but did not win the state tournament. And normally you need to win the state to go to the regional and then to the World Series. Well, this was a little unique this year because New Hampshire didn't send a team to the regional tournament for New England. So Connecticut wound up getting an extra team, and Trumbull became that extra team. Waterford, Connecticut, another great program. Waterford beat Trumbull to win the state title, but because Trumbull was the number two team, they also made it to the New England regional. They went to Rhode Island to play the regional tournament, and the little engine that could, the number two seeded Trumbull team, goes on and beats everybody. They played great baseball all the way through to knocking off a dynamic Pittsfield, Massachusetts team to win the New England title and then on to the World Series. Had a very good run. Also lost to a team from Arlington, Virginia. Very good team. Lost to them 2-1. But Trumbull baseball, so much to be proud of because a lot of people saw them as an underdog. How could they possibly get there? And there they were. They were within two games of a World Series championship. It was a great run for a great group of kids, great families, and just a remarkable coaching staff.
Yeah, and talk about like a Hail Mary, Rob. They weren't even supposed to be there, but what an incredible way to take that opportunity and say, you know what, we have the talent, we have the hard work behind us, and we're going to do the best we can with it and going as far as they did. Now, Rob, my understanding is you were actually the broadcaster for the state and regional tournaments before the World Series. Is that correct?
That is all true. I did the state games at Unity Park in Trumbull. then did the all the regional games up in North Providence, Rhode Island. And I mean, excuse me, I did every game, you know, North Providence against Maine. I did that one. So, yeah, I did all the games. And then I did sneak in one broadcast at the World Series down in Virginia. Just had to get one under my belt. So
it was
really a lot of fun. I love doing the games. I love watching these kids compete. They have so much energy and heart, and they're great fun. I talked to all of them at one point or another, and so much fun. Just, you know, really proud of what these kids did and what the families did and everything involved. It's just everything that's good about baseball and sports.
I'm curious. We're talking to Rob Adams, who is our local sports expert on the morning show, but he's also a local sports broadcaster. In fact, he basically was traveling around with Trumbull's Babe Ruth team during their very successful season and even their attempt to get a World Series title. Rob, I grew up in a baseball family as well. My brother playing baseball since he basically could walk, going to Division I ball for college. And so I also, you know, I can relate to what you're saying, where you follow the team around and you go where they go, essentially. But I was curious, why is baseball so successful in Connecticut? Like, I was curious from a more broad perspective. It seems like Connecticut is usually involved as one of the New England teams, if not the New England team to watch out for the World Series. I find that baseball, we have very good programs in Connecticut. And I was wondering why? Not to be, you know, a downer on Connecticut, but I was curious how that came to be. You know, we're smashed sort of between two major cities. You've got New York City and Boston, where they've got probably some of, well, maybe not this season for the Yankees, but they've got some of the best baseball programs in the country. Why does Connecticut do so well in the baseball sector?
Well, first of all, thanks for that little dig on the Yankees. I will.
I am a Yankee fan. Just so you know, I am a Yankee fan. My husband's a Red Sox fan. But yeah, it's just not. It's not. It has not been an enjoyable season. It just has not, Rob.
No, it is not. It is not. You're absolutely right. And I suffered through that game yesterday. Mm. But anyway, Connecticut has a lot of Connecticut sports is from the town level. It really is. It's like a legacy thing. And with baseball, it's something that begins with kids, you know, when they're young, their families, their dads taking them out, and then getting them involved in these town leagues, because that's a lot of it right there. Trumbull has a great legacy baseball program that dates back years. Jerry McDougal, the legendary high school baseball coach at Trumbull High. It starts from there. And so in the community, you're taught certain things. I mean, this sounds so silly, but it's true. You're taught Trumbull football. You're taught Trumbull baseball or whatever the case may be. And it builds up from there. And then you've got people like head coach Mike Buswell and people like that in Trumbull who know how to cultivate and get you to buy into a program. And they really preach staying in the town, playing Trumbull Babe Ruth versus an AAU team or something like that. Stay in town. Do you want to make a big run with Babe Ruth? Do you want to make a big run with all your friends? And that's what went on with this team. From every single member, they all bought in because they've all been playing together for years.
Mm.
So it's that legacy. It's that tradition. It's that I want to be able to go out and play with my friends every day, every night. And for these kids, the payoff was they went and played in a 5,000-seat minor league stadium in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
It's pretty cool.
Gorgeous. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous facility that's only like 3 years old. Remarkable. And that's what it was. Because I was whatever I am, I was riding with the team in their van to and from the hotel. So I could hear that chemistry. I could hear that back and forth. They love each other. And that's a big part of it. It goes back to community. It's like, you know, it's built by it's built by their background. It really is.
Yeah. Well, I know baseball is so alive and well in Connecticut, and we are so incredibly proud of Trumbull's Babe Ruth team, and proud, of course, to have you on the show as often as we do, Rob. It's so cool. Your job is amazing, and I love that you got to follow this team and see them grow and see their great success this season, and I thank you so much for reporting back to us here on the morning show. Appreciate you.
The pleasure to do it, and you know, to give these kids a shout out from the JJ Scavones and Braden Jagos and Luke McDermott that it just stood out in this experience. I'm really happy to, you know, report back and let everyone know there's good stuff going on. Don't just, you know, it's not just Little League baseball. There's Babe Ruth baseball as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. Rob Adams, always appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it, Melissa. Thanks.
All right. Talk to you soon.